All right, welcome into another episode of Denmark and Marsh. I am Dylan Denmark, the producer for Jaguars Today and Hacker After Dark. Graham Marsh is going to be beside me momentarily for what was a busy weekend in the city of Jacksonville for the Players' Championship. We have an SEC tournament to talk about. Justin Fields finally got traded, and we're seeing the final percolings of the NFL free agency. The Jaguars signed a kicker, Joey Sly, this morning. He was with Washington last year. And they just recently, as of like 15 minutes ago, signed Tennessee outside linebacker Trevis Gibson. So, you know, the big stuff happened last week, but you're still going to see a couple of signings from every team, regardless of who they are and what their cap situation is. But Graham, first, let's get to the Florida Gators and what they did in the tournament.
Let's do it.
So the SEC tournament, they make it to the championship game. They survive Georgia, beat down Bama. They end on a 21-2 run at the end of the first half.
Destroy Bama.
They played A&M Saturday. I didn't see any of that game.
I watched the whole game.
And then they lose to Auburn, and they lose one of their trees, I call him, one of their big guys, Micah. What's surprising to me, and we'll talk about the Gators first before we get to March Madness in the bracket. What's surprising to me is they made this run in the SEC tournament, and they were still a 7 seed. Like, should they have been at least a 6 at worst? Because, I mean, everything that you read going into the week was they're going to be a 7 seed if they played, you know, okay in the tournament. And they end up going to the championship game and, you know, losing by 20. But still, it's an accomplishment, even though they were expected to play Kentucky and Tennessee, even though they played lesser opponents that they thought they were going to play.
I definitely thought a 7 seed was low. I thought they should have been a higher seed for sure. That said, history has shown us that conference tournament results, outside of obviously winning the conference tournament because it automatically locks you into the tournament, history has shown us that your success or lack thereof in your conference tournament doesn't really affect the bracket seeding that much. I have always felt that that doesn't make a lot of sense because it's showing... The conference tournament is the best indicator of showing how good a basketball you're playing right now, right before the tournament starts. So I've always felt that it should carry more weight than it does, but again, history has shown us it really doesn't carry that much weight. I mean, Carolina lost to NC State in the ACC championship. Carolina is still a 1 seed. NC State, who again just won the ACC, is a 10 seed. But NC State didn't have a very good regular season. That's the discrepancy with Florida, in my opinion. I thought their regular season was good enough to justify higher than a 7 seed. That loss to Vandy is what killed them. If they hadn't lost to Vandy, I think that they maybe even could have been a 5. They probably, when it was all said and done, would have been a 6 without that loss. And you also don't know how much the committee may have or may not have factored in Micah Hand-Lockton's injury and knowing that Florida's not going to have him.
So how big of a loss is that for Florida in the tournament?
I think in terms of scoring, it's not necessarily a huge loss. He's not a big scorer. I mean, his backup scores more points than him, Alex Condon. And Tyrese Samuel is really the main big that actually scores for Florida. He's really the main big that if Todd Golden says, all right, we need a bucket inside, they're feeding Tyrese Samuel, not Hand-Lockton or even Condon when he's in the game, even though Condon has a better touch than Hand-Lockton. But where Hand-Lockton makes a huge difference for them is he's their best rebounder. And one of the main ways that Florida has been such a good team all year is they've dominated the glass all year against anybody they play. And a lot of that's because of the 7-footer they got with Hand-Lockton. The other thing where I believe that not having him could hurt them is just the sheer depth inside. That's been another huge advantage for the Gators all season, is very few teams have 3 bigs that they feel like can play big minutes. And Florida has had that all season between Hand-Lockton, Samuel, and Alex Condon. You now just have 2, and Condon and Samuel can both play just fine, but now all of a sudden, in any given tournament game, if one of them gets in foul trouble, you could be in real trouble. If Tyrese Samuel gets in foul trouble, that could be tough, especially if the team you're playing has got a big presence inside and you need him to be able to be that force to protect the rim. I could see that being an issue. And they'll really miss Micah Hand-Lockton at that point because you won't have that extra guy that can step in while somebody's in foul trouble and can sit out for, you know, 10 minutes or so in the game. In terms of their offensive firepower, it doesn't do a whole lot. Like I said, I think Hand-Lockton was averaging like 5 a game or something like that. They score more points when, like I said earlier, they score more points when Alex Connor, his backup, is in the game anyways. It's just the rebounding and the potential foul trouble that I can see.
And Micah, from a little bit I've seen down the stretch, like, that dude is a rim protector, and I call him a tree because he blocks so many shots, anybody that's going down the lane.
He's Florida's first 7-footer in like 20 years or something crazy.
Who was the last one?
I forgot his name. It was somebody before our
time. About to say, it had to have been before the tournament run they did in 06-07.
Yeah, it was before that.
So Florida will play the winner of Boise State, Colorado. They're in the play-in game Tuesday, and they'll play the winner of that game. Is it Friday? It's Friday at 4:30?
Yeah, it's Friday.
Okay, so that Florida plays the winner of that game Friday at 4:30. If it goes chalk and Florida wins that game, they'll end up playing Marquette, the 2 seed. And then from there, they'll probably play Kentucky in the Sweet 16 if it goes. When you look at the tournament and you look at the bracket, I kind of have this opinion of college athletics now. Is March Madness still good with the transfer portal and everything, knowing that you don't have a dominant team?
Yes.
Because it seems like anybody can win it. Like,
and by the way, you do have a dominant team. It's UConn.
Okay, so UConn's the team. Yeah. I've seen they're the favorite, but they're the team, like, say they play 75 at their best. They can still beat anybody. They can still beat a Houston, a Tennessee. Okay.
I think so.
Okay.
I think anyone beating UConn at any point in this tournament will be a sizable upset, in my opinion. Now, obviously, once you get to Final Four, National Championship, if you're playing Houston, North Carolina, some of those other 1 seeds and 2 seeds, it's not like some, you know, crazy Cinderella upset. But UConn is going to be a multiple point favorite regardless of who they play every single game.
Yeah, I haven't seen UConn play at all. I've seen Houston play a little bit. I've seen them play Baylor. I've watched all the good SEC teams, Florida, Bama, Kentucky. Tennessee.
The SEC is the best league top to bottom, in my opinion.
So Tennessee's always, I say always, the last 5-10 years, even with the teams they had with Grant Williams, they had a really good team, and they would always find a way to lose a game.
It's the Rick Barnes effect.
Okay, so do you think that happens again this year?
Yes.
Sweet 16?
In my bracket, I think I have them losing in the first weekend. Let me double check that. By the way, just to get this out there, I will fully admit, those that know me listening to this podcast know this, but if you're not, Dylan and I are both UF grads, so we both root for the Gators, but also I've grown up liking North Carolina as well. They've kind of always been my second team. Gators are always first, but I've grown up a Tar Heel. UNC and Florida are in my Final Four.
Of course
so,
they are.
This bracket has been picked emotionally. I'll just put that. If you're looking for a fully objective, check the net rankings, look at KenPom type of bracket, yep, my bracket's not for you.
And don't listen to me at all.
I have Tennessee losing in the round of 64 to St. Peter's.
Okay. And St. Peter's, and that's a 2-15 game.
Yeah, and St. Peter's, for those that don't remember, they're the team that beat Kentucky, I think, 2 years ago now, or maybe it was 2 or 3 years ago now. They had a Cinderella, I think, Sweet 16 run. They beat Kentucky and somebody else. As a 15, they beat a 2. Just remembering the vibes St. Peter's brought, which was awesome. They were just a really fun team a couple years ago. I just want to keep riding that magic with them. That's why I picked them. And then also the fact that Rick Barnes does have a reputation of choking in the tournament. That is like a Rick Barnes thing. So from one of the high seeds, from one of the 1 or 2 seeds losing in the first round to a 15-16, that's kind of what I have circled to happen. Also, again, I'll just openly admit it. I hate Tennessee, so I would love to see them lose.
Yeah. Do you think what's the big name? Connect.
Dalton Connect.
Does he, I mean, Tennessee's had stars in the last couple of years. Is he like the best one they've had?
Yeah. I think
he's
yes.
been.
Yes. What I will say, I know I just got done saying that I have them losing in the round of 64. Obviously, I'd be shocked if they actually did. I will say, this Tennessee team, because of Kinect, does have a good formula for making a deep run. Because in the tournament, we all know this, that have watched college basketball year after year. If you watch any basketball, this is true in the NBA too. If you expect to make like a Final Four run, then I don't care how good you are. I don't care if you're the best team in the country. Something you have to have if you expect to make a really deep run of the tournament, you have to have that guy that when everything breaks down, the offensive possession just didn't work, some kind of play call didn't work, and everything just went to crap the entire possession. You need a guy that with like 4 seconds left on the shot clock can just be like, screw it, I'm going to go get a bucket. And he does. Dalton Kinect is that guy. So, like I said, you have to have that guy to make a run, and they do. So, I tend to believe, I will say along with my bracket, that I think Tennessee either gets a huge upset early and loses and doesn't make it out of the first weekend, or it's the Elite Eight and they're still hanging around. I kind of think it's an all or nothing year for them.
Okay, yeah, I feel that way with about a lot of teams.
Because they just proved, by the way, they just proved in the SEC tournament that they can lose to a lesser opponent.
Right, yeah, I saw. But they lose to A&M?
Mississippi State,
yeah. Kentucky lost to A&M. I was walking around in TPC, and I was like, whoa. I mean, but like kind of like you said, like the people that make the brackets in the tournament, like they don't take a lot of stock in the SEC tournament. So, I mean, you could also say, you know, it's better for them that they lost so they have more time to have a break going into the tournament. I don't know how much of an effect it has. You know, Florida's a little more beat up now, especially with the injury. And they played, 4 games in 4 consecutive days. I still think you're fine. I mean, you have practically the whole week off.
Those that watched the Auburn game yesterday, the Florida-Auburn game yesterday, it was pretty evident that Florida just ran out of gas by the end of the game. They, like you said, they had played 4 days in a row. They had lost one of their big men in a really, really gruesome, brutal injury.
And it was the final 90 seconds of the game.
What was?
The injury, wasn't it?
No, the injury was like the first 3 minutes of the game.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. The injury was like the very beginning of the game. Yeah, it was like 2 or 3 minutes in. But those that saw that, you can kind of see, you know, kind of early second half, mid second half, you could start to see that Florida put together a run, and I think they got it to within one, or they maybe even took the lead. And Walter Clayton Jr. had a pretty bad turnover. He had a dribble drive to around the free throw line, turns around midair. He's looking to pass it to Zion Pullen, passes it right to an Auburn guy. They're in transition, get a huge dunk. That place was like 75% Auburn fans. Place goes insane. And I think right after that or right before that, Auburn hit a big 3-2, and they started to get the momentum back, and Florida just couldn't really recover after that. But again, you got the sense that, yeah, they just ran out of gas after playing 4 straight days. Just like you said, you captured it well. They survive against Georgia. They played a horrible basketball game, but they still won.
That felt like a high school game. There were so many sloppy
it was bad.
Turnovers and I mean, they were hack-a-shacking one
it
of our
felt,
guys.
You know what it felt like? It felt like when you go to the bars with your buddies, and on the way home, you see a basketball hoop, and you stop and just start shooting around.
Yeah, and you think you can...
And you're all hammered, and you see 3 baskets, and you're just throwing it up there and seeing what happens. That's what that game felt. That game was disgusting to watch. They kill Bama. They kind of survive again against A&M, but A&M had been playing as good a ball as anybody in the tournament. They had just beaten Kentucky. So that was a really impressive win. Just to even get to the SEC title game, I thought was really impressive for the Gators. And they just ran up against a team that was playing really good ball and had all the momentum against Auburn. I think there's a very short list of teams in the entire country that would have won that game. So it's still a really good run in the SEC tournament. And again, I thought they should have been higher than a 7 seed. They should have been at least a 6, in my opinion. Arguably a 5, although I understand the Vanderbilt loss hurts. Yeah,
again, Florida will play the winner of Boise State and Colorado. That game for Florida will take place Friday at 4:30 in Indianapolis. Let's talk to the talk about the TPC for a little bit. I was out there Friday and Sunday. Were you out there all weekend? Pretty much every day, just about?
I didn't go on the weekends, no. I was out there Tuesday, Thursday, Friday.
Okay, and then you did the updates.
I did the updates from the station on Sunday.
Okay, okay. Friday, so story time. There's this thing I didn't know anything about. It's called a goat. And there was three goats, legend has it, that used to cut the grass and help fertilize it way back when, 40, 50 years ago. And they eventually got ran off. So you get a goat if you're in the media for, I got it from getting food in the media center.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's a little goat pass.
Yes, on yeah. So me and E.T. are, I run into him right outside the clubhouse. He's like, man, we're going to go up here on 17. Do we go up there? And they're and so we're about to walk in. I'm like, I have no idea what we're doing. I'm just hanging out, running to Kentucky Jeff from the drill and a couple of old people that I've seen, that I haven't seen in a long time. And we try to go in, and the security guard looks at me and goes, oh, you got to go. You're good. And man, I don't know what it was, but when he said that, that made me feel like so special. It was like like we were like upper echelon. I'm like, dude, I don't know nothing.
You're high class.
Yeah.
Bro.
So we get up there.
You're VIP.
They got free food. They got free drink. They got all this stuff. And then Kentucky Jeff tells me, he's like, dude, you can get in the clubhouse and get some goat merch. So all it is it's just like a shirt you got, but it's got a gold goat. Dude, these polos are like $130. The hats are like normal. They're $30-$40. I mean, like the golf, I call them like the fleeces, like the sweaters are like $200-$300. And I ended up getting me some. But man, you talk about, I was far and away the poorest person at clubhouse. I'm talking, you can't appreciate this because you grew up in Queens Harbor, Graham.
I did. The mean streets.
I grew up on the west side, dude. And I'm, you know, man, I have barely enough money to rub two nickels together. And I'm in there, and me and E were like, bro, we should not be in here, but we are in here, and we're like we should be in here, man. But it was a really fun week, man, the whole weekend. I was not that excited going into the week because I'm kind of like your average golf fan. Like, I'll turn on Sunday and see what the leaderboard is. I mean, there wasn't many stars because of the LIV stuff. It ended up being a great tournament at the end.
I think for at least the casuals, someone who's super, super into golf, like watching every hole, every second of all 4 days might have a different opinion. I'm sure they still have the same opinion, though, because it's still fun to watch. I think the majority of us, I think all we ask for in terms of the tournament is late on Sunday, I want some drama. Late on Sunday, I want at least two guys, maybe more, to have 4 to 5 holes left and still be able to win or lose the tournament, you know? Where you lose me in golf is when one guy's just running away and he's got a 5-6 stroke lead with, you know, 6 or 7 holes to go, and he would have to totally botch everything to lose, and he can play every shot super conservatively and be just fine as long as he pars or whatever. That's when you lose me a bit, but like, that's what's so fun about the players is, because of 17, because of the risk on the island green of hitting it in the water, man, you can have a 2 to 3 stroke lead and not be safe when you're on 17 if someone's right on your tail behind you. So it was really fun to watch the end. The Shoffley putt was just brutal, man.
Oh, yeah, that was
just brutal. To come like to do the fist pump like it's going in and then see it lip out like that. That's tough, man. The golf gods were angry at him for some reason.
Yeah, and the most amazing thing is Scheffler goes in. I forget how many strokes he was down going into Sunday. This dude he shoots a 64.
Dude, he was like 5 strokes behind, yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Shoffley shoots a 70. Clark shoots a 69, and Harmon shoots a 68. You were 4 to 5 to 6 shots better than the leaders going into Sunday, and you still needed some help to come back. I mean, that is a perfect example of why he is one of the best golfers in the world. Another side story, me and E, you know, E doesn't know much about golf. I was talking to him about what the Tiger Roar meant and the par 3s and par 4s. So we see Scotty, and we're on the burn on the par 3 on the 3rd hole. So we're watching him, and then we walk over to the 4th hole, and I'm like, man, we should go in the middle of the fairway, watch a second shot. The drive will come to us, and maybe we might get close. He's like, man, I'm trying to see the drive. So I was like, all right. So we go around. We go to the tee box. We watch him drive. We have a good shot. We had a perfect video, but the caddy was right in front of us. You would appreciate this. You know, it's like shooting a basketball, and the ref's butt is like right in the right in your way.
Yep.
Good layup. So we watch the drive, and we walk away on the fourth hole after he tees off because it was hot outside, and we wanted to go get us a drink. Man, we walk away, and it was the same freaking hole in the fairway where Scotty holes out, and he gets an eagle. I was so mad when I found out later. I was like, we would have been right there. He goes, yeah. I don't care, but that was because that was where, like I told you last week, whenever I saw Tiger, he tees off, and his ball is like not even 10 yards from where I was on the rope in the fairway. And, you know, seeing him talk to the caddy and him being that close to him is just insane. And watching the whole gallery, Scotty was really the only one that I saw where the gallery just followed him wherever he went.
Yeah.
And it was still, I mean, nothing close to Tiger. Like, E was talking about he wished he had seen Tiger. I mean, there'll never be another Tiger, anything like him with the following he did and everything. But it was still a good tournament from everything. And I mean, I had fun, man. And I didn't think that I was going to. I mean, I was there Friday. I was at Bob Hayes Saturday all day at the track meet from 7 to 7. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to go Sunday. And then E kind of – E did E things, and he taught me into going Sunday. So that was fun. What else happened over the weekend was Justin Fields being traded. You look at that draft class, Graham. Mac Jones traded for a 6th-round pick. Justin Fields traded for a 6th-round pick. Nobody wants Zach Wilson from – the New York Jets. Who's the other quarterback that was in there? Trey Lance is traded for a 4th-rounder, and he's a 3rd-string pretty much in Dallas. And I kind of wanted to tie that into the draft class that we're going to have this year with Caleb Williams and Daniels from LSU, Drake May. J.J. McCarthy is oddly surging up in the draft board, and Michael Penix. If you look at the draft class from 21, so much of what a quarterback and his success rate is all about the situation that he goes to, whether it be the fit that's within him, the head coach that helps him. You think Zach Wilson goes to the Jets and he has a defensive head coach. Mac Jones goes to New England, he has Bill Belichick, and has, as you mentioned, Matt Patricia as his OC, who's a DC. Trey Lance just couldn't play. I mean, you have Shanahan. You had everything made for you. You started the season 1 year, and when Kyle Shanahan bails on you, that speaks volumes on how, you know, somebody of his echelon is willing to move on. And then Trevor's really the only one, and he does not even – his option's not even going to get picked up this year. He's probably going to get an extension probably going into the next year. But that just goes to show you that even though you consider having a good draft class – it doesn't mean that you're going to shoo in to have success at the quarterback, even if you get him in the first round.
Yeah, when you look at this year's class, the reality is, out of those top four, if we're including J.J. McCarthy, which is kind of a stretch to include J.J. McCarthy, in my opinion, but let's just, for argument's sake, let's include him in the top four. Most likely, one of these guys will be a star, like probably like a top 10 QB. One will be probably average, and two will probably stink. That's just how it normally goes.
Yeah, I think if I had to predict right now, I think there's going to be 5 quarterbacks picking in the first round.
Who's the 5th?
Penix.
Penix.
I just think somebody
Penix the first?
Somebody's going to fall in love with him, and somebody's going to go up and get him in the first round.
Wouldn't the fall in love rumors have already happened after the combine and stuff, though?
Yeah, but you know, there's always a run. I think you'll have Caleb Williams, Daniels, and May go top 5. Somebody else is going to go in the top 10. There's going to be a 4th quarterback. It could probably be McCarthy, what it looks like right now. And then Penix will go somewhere in the teens, 20s.
The run on quarterbacks early is going to cause the Penixes and Bo Nixes of the world to be drafted probably sooner than their grades. I'll say that for sure. A first rounder, I don't know. Man, if there's some things the NFL does not like, It's injured guys and old guys, and Penix is both of those.
Yeah.
He's what, 25?
Oh, yeah, he's 25. He's one of those old, old guys. He's played in the league for, or played in college for 6 years. I mean, think about it. Carolina, Washington, New England, they need a quarterback, so they'll select one. The Giants are the team that's on the borderline. Apparently, Russell Wilson took a visit to the Giants, and they said that you're not going to be a starter. So they're probably not looking for one, but they're probably looking for one in a year or two to replace Daniel Jones.
I was going to say, I'll tell you who doesn't need a quarterback, and it's the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Minnesota needs a quarterback. You don't think Sam Darnold's going to be the guy. He signed with Minnesota last week. The Raiders, it looks like they're going to go with Gardner Minshew, but you still need one. Denver, and then Seattle still up there. So there's still teams that are around there, and those are all just teams within the top 17. You still have those quarterbacks because you can still have a team that's in that early, mid-second round that trades up and get a first, because we all know that these quarterbacks, when they go and, you know, you get the vibe in the draft, like, somebody's falling because somebody wants to go up, and you have all these different things. I still, at the end of the day, I think that five quarterbacks will go. And like I mentioned earlier, I think you'll have probably two guys go be really good, two will be in, and one will just be your typical Paxton Lynch, he just won't be any good. But, you know, it's crazy. People think that quarterbacks, I mean, you look at the quarterbacks in the past, you had Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston go 1-2 in 2015. And you can go look at other quarterbacks in the past. The bust rate on quarterbacks in the past couple of years hasn't been as low because of what high school's been in the 7-on-7, and there's no wing tees anymore, and you run the spread in college. The problem is...
The NFL's more catered to quarterbacks.
Yes,
success.
And the rule changes and all that. The problem is they get to the pros, and everything they've done in high school and college doesn't prepare them in the NFL. They don't take snaps under center. So many of the play calls they do in college is like one word, and their play is one or two reads. It's not like that in the NFL.
And if you go to a really good college, like if you go to an Ohio State or a Bama, or it was Clemson a few years back, not so much now. Even sometimes with Washington this year, with all the receivers they had, and Oregon sometimes with the guys they had, you kind of get used to, as a QB, you kind of get used to your elite receivers with elite speed running wide open all the time.
Well, not only that, you're used to having a really good offensive lineman knowing 11 out of 12 games in the college football season that your O-line is better than the D-line.
Yeah.
And they're not evenly matched,
yeah. You
know, in the NFL.
And it becomes, I think that even if throwing with really strong anticipation is within you to be able to do, you stop honing in that skill, and that skill deteriorates when you get used to a guy breaking wide open and you have a second and a half, 2 seconds to complete that throw. And you can see him break wide open and make sure he's wide open before you throw it. And you very, very, very rarely get to do that in the NFL. How many young QBs do we see hang on to the ball way too long because they're waiting for guys to break open two or three steps instead of when that window opens and I got to throw it right now? You know what I mean?
All the time, yeah.
They said, I was listening to Ryan Russillo talk with, he has Todd McShay on usually once a week to talk about draft guys and whatever, and they were talking about Jaden Daniels. And McShay was telling Russillo that when he interviewed Brian Kelly, Jaden Daniels' first season at LSU, like halfway through the season, they had played like 6 or 7 games, something like that. People were praising Jaden Daniels in the media and whatnot for his lack of interceptions. He had thrown so few interceptions. And Brian Kelly was talking about how it was driving him crazy because Jaden was starting to feed into that narrative and be like, yeah, I don't throw picks. And he was waiting too long to throw certain balls that he was supposed to be anticipating and relying on the timing and the play call based on the coverage to be open. Jaden was waiting to make sure he saw it for like over a second to complete the pass. And Brian Kelly, it frustrated him so much because he was like, even if this means Jaden throws a couple more picks, this unlocks so much more in him and so much more in our offense to be able to continuously move the ball if he just throws with this anticipation that he's refusing to do. So literally, Brian Kelly said for the next few games, he was hoping Jaden Daniels would throw an interception, like literally hoping he would do it, because at least it means he was taking the chances that he needed to take to advance, to unlock their offense and advance them to another level. That's a prime example of what so many guys struggle with going from college to the pros. So many guys don't ever end up doing that, and they don't take that next step. So when it gets to the league, and that extra 2 to 3 steps of separation that you almost never get in the league doesn't come, and you see these guys get gun-shy. They don't want to throw the ball. They're getting sacked. Look at Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson became notorious for taking these awful sacks because he's sitting there in the backfield trying to he's you know doing that like try to spin out of the sack the guys do, and they
right and spin left.
And a sack that's going to be a loss of 2 ends up being a loss of 6
or 12. You
know? And he's doing that because he's not anticipating someone breaking open in the middle of the field. And Jaden Daniels took that step this year, wins a Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, and so much of the interceptions is overblown. Like, you know, fans will, and everybody, the water cooler talk, you look at a quarterback and you go, okay, what's a touchdown interception? Well, interceptions aren't all bad. I mean, you don't want to have an interception deep in your own territory, and you don't want to have an interception in the red zone. How many times, like, I remember the Dolphins played the Bills, and it's a 3rd and 10, and Tua is at his own 40, throws a deep ball, it's intercepted, and the Bills get the ball coming out from the 20. That's a decent punt.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much of that so many people don't see.
Josh Allen is just normal. For that.
Right, yeah. Josh Allen's a gunslinger, and, you know, a lot like Brett Favre when he played.
There's a casual take out there that Josh Allen throws too many interceptions, but if you watch their games, it's the punt a lot of times, like you're saying. We're like the narrative is if we're in good field position and it's 3rd and 12 and you throw a pick, it's okay. Because at least I know you're taking a chance and trying to actually do something. Versus the guy that's not even going to try, and I know I have no shot at converting the first down.
Yeah. Let's get back to Justin Fields. I was kind of surprised he kind of went for a 6th rounder. I kind of thought if Trey Lance went for a 4th at the beginning of the year, Justin Fields can still play a lot more than Mac Jones, and he went for the same round. Word on the street is evidently that Mike Tomlin reached out to Russell Wilson. He said that Russell Wilson's going to be the starter, you know, reassuring him, and Justin Fields will be a backup. I have the sense that Justin Fields is going to start at least 3, 4, maybe 5 games this year. Because like I said last week, I don't know how much is in the tank left for Russell Wilson. If Sean Payton can't get it out of you, and he knew what he was getting into when he took the job at Denver, and how much money you have to give up knowing that somebody else is playing for you, and you're not really going into an offensive-friendly team. I mean, Pittsburgh is in that division. Their culture is run the football, hard nose, play physical, and they're not, you know, they haven't adjusted to this new NFL, so to speak. I'll be surprised if Justin Fields doesn't start a couple of games if he goes once the season starts and he goes to Steelers.
It really depends. We always see this. It really depends on how good the team is. If it's, let's say it's midway through the year, they've played 8 games, and they're 5-3 with Russell Wilson at the helm. There won't be a lot of talks of playing Justin Fields. Okay, flip that. Say they're 3-5 and they're struggling. Justin Fields may already have been in the game. It just depends on the team's success. It's like with the Gators. I know that's not what we're talking about, but like with the Gators, there's this whole talk of, is DJ Lagway going to play very much this year? Well, it depends on how good they are. If they stink halfway through the year, then yeah, the staff is going to put Lagway in to save their job. If they're good, they're going to ride with Mertz. It's the same thing. We always see this. It's all predicated on team success. Even if the quarterback play isn't great, even if it's not crazy productive, which last year at times the Broncos played pretty good ball, kind of in spite of Russell Wilson. And even though he was playing efficiently, they kind of babysat him like you would like a rookie. Sort of like Mac Jones his first year in New England when he went to the Pro Bowl. A lot of running the ball, a lot of good defense, that type of stuff is what carried the Broncos. They had a lot, they got a ton of turnovers on defense, which helped them win a lot of games. So at the time, until the whole weird stuff went down with his injury guarantee and all that, because contractually that you could tell they wanted to move on after this year. But at the time, from the fan base, there was no noise to bench Russell Wilson because they were having team success. The year before, when he was playing horrible and they weren't winning games, there was tons of noise to bench him. And again, that situation's a little bit of an outlier because of his contract and everything, and they kind of had to get ahead of it to be able to move on from him now. But it's going to be the same thing with the Steelers. If they're good, they're going to ride with Russell Wilson, and you probably won't see Justin Fields play much at all this year. If they're bad, you'll probably see him by midway through the season.
Some news coming out. Adam Schefter, all-pro nickel, Taron Johnson from the Bills signing extension, making him the highest paid nickel. His contract's 3 years, $31 million. So you're going to see a couple more free agents. Again, the Jags signed a kicker, Joey Sly from Washington, and they got Gibson from the Tennessee, the outside linebacker. So you're still going to see a couple more free agent signings. Eric Armstead speaks with the media today at 2. A lot of the players spoke last week, the Gabe Davis and Darby and all those guys. But, I mean, the big guys were all last week. I guess the only big one that's left will be Mike Williams. He won't be cheap, but he won't be expensive. He'll be middle just because he's one of those good guys. But, I mean, the NFL free agency is pretty much done. All your big splashes were last week, and then now it's just time for settle in for the draft and see what where it goes from here.
It's about to be all draft, no breaks.
Yeah.
It's about to be. I'd say after this week, pretty much all the residual signings, kind of the last straggler guys, will be done. And yeah, because at that point, you kind of know what holes the team wanted to fill in free agency versus fill in the draft. And you kind of see, I mean, like, look, how many Jaguar fans had Jackson Powers Johnson penciled in as the pick at 17?
97% of them.
Right. And now, I mean, there's no chance they're going to draft a center because they just got Mitch Morse. So that's a hole that, you know, if you're a person that likes to make mock drafts, which I am, I love mock drafts. If you had Jackson Powers Johnson a lot of times at 17, you're not going to have him at all anymore. You won't have any center. So to me, we've talked about this at length multiple times. To me, I still think, even with the Ronald Darby signing, I still think they're taking a corner at 17. I would imagine Ronald Darby's going to be your nickel probably to start the season. And a rookie that you took in the first round will be on one side, and Tyson Campbell will be on the other. What other position do you think they definitely are going
to
get in the
draft? Need to address corner one, receiver two.
I think receiver as well.
And then some kind of pass rush at 3. That would be that's the order I would go.
You think they're going to draft the guard?
No.
I think
not early, not in the first 3 rounds.
I think third round they could, but that'd be the earliest. So we're pretty much on the same page. I think it won't be the first 2 rounds. It's tough to say this because Balky is 100% not a need guy. He's very much a best available guy, which is not wrong. Sometimes I just think he does it a little too much to a fault. I kind of go back and forth on that. You draft best available, yes. You should. That's a better model than drafting based on need. However, if the number one guy on your board is a position you don't need whatsoever, and the number two guy on your board is pretty close to your number one guy, and it's a position of dire need, there's a little mixing and matching you got to do. I don't think it's as easy as you always draft best available or you always draft. It's an inexact science.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like the Jags are in a perfect position right in the middle teens where somebody that should go 8, 9, 10 will fall for whatever reason. And I mean, it's raining outside. And that's a spot where, like, man, if Brock Bowers falls to you at 17, even though you drafted Brenton Strange, and even though you already have Evan Ingram, and he's under contract for this year and next year, it is hard to pass on a guy like him, knowing what he's done in college. The day one when he got to the University of Georgia, you're like, this guy's a dude of dudes. And, you know, like we've said, Jacksonville's in a position where they could get a guy that falls, or they can get a guy of need, or they could trade back and still get the guy. That, I mean, it happened last year. Anton Harrison was the guy they wanted all along, and they were able to trade back twice and still get him.
For all those seventh-round picks that contribute so much to this team.
Yeah, I mean,
team.
The Cooper Hodges and the...
What they should have done, in my opinion, is take all those background picks and try to get an extra fifth or a fourth. You know, and I get, you know, obviously the further back you go, the less valuable the picks are, but I don't know. Some of those guys weren't...
Yeah, they're probably not going to contribute. That's why they got those free agents to patch up the team for the
I mean,
year
as much
now.
As I love Eric Hallett's game, so like, what are we doing here, you know?
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this, though. I know you said Brock Bowers is the example, and I don't totally disagree, but let's say Roma Dunze won't fall. Let's say Adonai Mitchell falls to 17. Do you take Adonai Mitchell? Is he one of those can't pass up kind of guys?
Since it's a position of need, yeah, you got to have. You would have to have Mitchell. I mean, whoever you think is the best corner, like if the best, just say if you have one or two corners, you have Mitchell and just say Cooper DeJean for the sake of the argument. And one of those two guys are available and you know that that guy is probably going to be a day one starter for you. You got to pick that guy. You have to. I think over a Roma Dunze or any of those other receivers from LSU.
All right, Brian Thomas Jr. is available, and Quinyon Mitchell is available, the corner from Toledo.
I'd take corner because you can't get a good corner later in the draft. You can find a decent receiver still later in the draft.
I think so, too. I think I'd do the same
thing. So,
then you get like a Xavier Leggett or something in the second.
Yeah, once we get closer to the draft, we're going to dive deep into all the scenarios and what
we're
going to
whip out our mocks.
I cannot wait for all the Reddit boards to be popping of all the rumors. There was a crazy rumor on the Reddit board last year. I can't remember what it was. That somebody wanted. There was a team that was willing to trade up and get him. It was just all fun, and there was never any truth to it. But you know, I mean, we're in the talking business, and we'll obviously talk about it. Graham, anything else before we get out of here on this Monday of Denmark and Marsh? I kind of hit everything. TPC, Gator basketball.
How much are you a watch every dribble possible of March Madness kind of guy?
Nah, since I'll be working and I'll be running around probably doing some stuff with practice, I catch the end of games.
Because I'll
watch Gator basketball. I'll watch the SEC teams. I'll try to watch more of them compared to somebody else. Like I'll watch Houston. I'll watch the teams of note, but... I mean, I'm not spending, you know, my 4:30 afternoon watching BYU and Duquesne. I call it Duquesne.
Duquesne. They played Florida State in football to start the year 2 years ago.
Or you know, Washington State and Drake.
Well, no, I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about Tennessee and St. Peter's. You're going to watch?
Yeah.
Say, so, like, I will.
Yeah, I'll Dude, watch them.
Starting the play-in games are a little bit different. Starting Thursday, when we get day basketball... When March Madness tips off, those 4 days have an argument for me for the best 4 days of my year. Dude, I love it so much. So much.
Yeah, especially...
The only thing that tops it is if, like, the Jags are in the playoffs.
The first weekend, I mean, it's noon to midnight all day. Because, I mean, like...
Dude, it's the best.
Especially once you get out of football season and there's really not appointment viewing. I mean, there was... like yesterday, for example, I watched the players. I went to the players and I got home and watched the end of it on TV. NASCAR was like a joke. I mean, there were four cars that ended up on the lead lap. So everybody else was a lap down or two laps down. Like, that hasn't happened since like the 60s. It was like not entertaining to me. And then like that was it for sports. This kind of fills that void for 3 weekends until we see the draft. Although, yeah. I do watch a lot of college baseball.
I watch the NBA too. I love the NBA.
Yeah, the NBA is like not entertaining to me at all. I watched a little bit of Wemby yesterday.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, literally nothing was on and there was nothing else to watch. But
I was up late last night, little Hawks-Clippers action.
So are you betting on that or just watching it?
Sometimes I'll get the itch and I'll put a little change on it. But I used to bet huge units, like really throw down on stuff. I don't do that as much anymore. But, you know, if I want to pique my interest a little, I'll throw $20 on something. On the over or something like that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, college basketball, like the first 4 days of March Madness, when it's just constant games all the time, it's my favorite post. Just objective, like when you take out, because again, it's different when your teams are involved. But when you take out the Gators, you take out the Jags, I know the Gators are in this, but just even aside from their games, just watching any game that's a part of it, it's my favorite postseason.
Yeah, outside of a good college football Saturday and a good 3 to 4 o'clock window on the NFL, like March Madness is the best sporting event to watch.
It's so awesome.
And there's not, I mean, you have the Masters, but March Madness is more entertaining than Masters to me.
There's nothing like a good March Madness upset. There's nothing like it. A good 15 beating a 2 on a buzzer beater or something crazy. It's just awesome. It's so awesome. I love it so much.
It's entertaining for sure. So we'll come back later in the week. We'll preview whoever Florida's playing between the winner of Boise State and Colorado. I'm Dylan Denmark. That's Graham Marsh on this Monday afternoon. What's the date? The 18th, March 18th, 2024. You can get us on Twitter at 1010XL Denmark and at 1010XL Graham. Be sure to check out all the 1010XL podcast platforms, and we'll put it up on YouTube later today. Until then, we'll see y'all later in the week.